Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One of television's top comedy makers is our first guest. He's up for 2015 Emmy Awards Sunday night as the executive producer of the acclaimed Netflix series Master of None. Win or lose on Sunday, his next comedy enterprise debuts Monday on NBC. The Good Place, teaming Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. Michael Schur joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The television festival cycle turns fall next month via ITV Fest, taking place in Vermont. More than 50 prospective series pilots will be showcased, and many more pilot makers will get valuable meeting time. Executive Director Philip Gilpin Jr. details all this and more later this hour. Also ahead, the answer to this week's classic trivia question, and if we have time, maybe we'll get some Emmy predictions in. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted you are with us to wrap up this Friday afternoon on the program All About Television. Hope you've had a great week up to this point. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. We have a dynamite hour ahead for you with two wonderful guests. And get you involved, too. If you have something to say, get the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You'll catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you want to say something about using the phone, no problem. You can do what Guest 92 just did. Get into our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. We got some news note quickies on the way to our first guest, and here they are. The opening 2016 Thursday Night Football game on CBS last night was down 20% in ratings from last year's TNF debut. No word yet on the simulcast audience with NFL Network or the audience that was watching through Apple TV's new Twitter application. Amazon's new series, The Grand Tour, reuniting the original host of BBC's long-running auto showcase Top Gear, premieres November 18th. Yes, Amazon Fire TV will show it. And in the last hour, Variety reported that A&E has given thumbs up to Little Funny, a new docuseries overseen by Ellen DeGeneres on 11-year-old comedian Saffron Sethi Herndon. 10 episodes will run there next year. And that's news notes for today. As mentioned at the top, the 2016 Emmy Awards happen this Sunday night, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, and our first guest is one of the nominees. He's nominated as an executive producer of the award-winning series, one of the people here this year, Master of None, featuring one of the co-stars of The Office he knows very well, Aziz Ansari. He is someone who, in his course of his career, has made many memorable comedy moments happen, from The Office to The Comeback, to Parks and Recreation, which he co-created on NBC, to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which he created 3 years ago on Fox. And his latest effort premieres just after the Emmys, the following night on NBC, it's The Good Place, teaming Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. Joining us live from Los Angeles, an NBC exclusive, executive producer and head writer for The Good Place, Michael Schur. Michael, congratulations and welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
What is it like waiting until Sunday night to be an Emmy nominee, maybe an Emmy winner, by this time, 48 hours from now?
Well, it's a little nerve-wracking. You know, I've been through this a couple times, and you have two choices. You can sort of prepare yourself for the very likely possibility that you don't win, and then you're fine when you don't win, or you can start hoping and dreaming of that you might win, and then you're probably going to be disappointed. So I take the first path. I sort of assume that the journey is the destination, that it is truly just an honor to be nominated, and that way whatever happens, happens, and you just sort of roll with the punches.
You've had an incredible journey, Michael, but this last year, what an incredible side of that journey with Master of None, getting the Peabody Award this spring here in New York, being recognized one of the top shows of last year and also this year. Why do you think Master of None stood out to so many people and has had such an impact?
Well, the credit, 99.9% of the credit should go to Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang, who created the show together. They managed to do something that was a very high wire act, I think. They did an extremely personal set of stories. So, you know, the stories are very largely about their own experiences as two different versions of Asian Americans. You know, Aziz is of Indian descent, and Alan is a Taiwanese American, and they wrote largely about their own experiences as sort of second generation immigrants to America. And they did it in a way that became sort of universally appealing and interesting to people because, you know, a whole lot of people in this country didn't come from this country. And so they sort of just wrote what their own experiences were in their own lives and their own family histories, and then they made it really funny because they're two incredibly funny people. So I think there's sort of an old saw about storytelling, which is that the more sort of specific you get, the more relatable the stories become. It's sort of counterintuitive, but I think it's true. And they just made their stories very, very specific, and I think people found something to relate to within the specificity.
Mm-hmm. You've had the chance to work now with Aziz twice, one as a producer-writer on The Office, now with Master of None. What makes him special? How has he grown as a performer and now as an actor?
Well, he was on Parks and Recreation, not The Office, but you know, the point stands. When we first, Greg Daniels and I created Parks and Recreation, and Aziz was one of the very first people who we hired. And we actually hired him before we had a part for him. We just knew his work, and we went and met with him, and we just sort of felt like he was so funny that no matter what show we created, and at the time we didn't even know what the show was. We had a couple ideas, but we hadn't settled on what became Parks and Rec. But we just sort of felt like whatever show we made, that guy was so funny that he was going to be a valuable part of the show. So we really tailored his part. Tom Haverford was the character's name. We tailored it to Aziz because he'd already signed on. And when he started, he was just like a crazy sort of dynamo of stand-up comedy and sketch comedy. He was just a deeply funny guy. And what has happened since that time, which was back in 2008 to now, is that I think a couple things have happened. One is he's become much more of an actor than he was back then. Back then he was really like a comedian or a performer. He's really become a great actor, and he's become a great writer. And then also his material that he writes both for himself and for the show, for Master of None, has really become kind of sophisticated and interesting. He takes on big ideas. You know, there were episodes in the first season that were about feminism. There were episodes that were about, you know, ethnicity. He wrote a book called Modern Love that he co-wrote with a social psychologist that was about the ways that modern technology is affecting relationships and romance and stuff. He's really become very curious, and it's sort of my favorite quality in any person, and certainly in Aziz. He's just become a deeply curious person. He looks at the world around him, and he tries to sort of make sense of it in a way that, you know, most comedians sort of don't.
Hello, welcome, guest 1014, our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Use that to pop a question or a comment to Michael, or you can use this number, 646-652-2906. Again, Michael Schur is the executive producer, one of them, of Master of None, which is up for several 2016 Emmy Awards this Sunday night, 7 Eastern and Pacific time. It gets underway. But also, he is the executive producer and key writer of The Good Place, NBC's new comedy that premieres this coming Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And we'll talk to him about that shortly. And by the way, we'll move later in the month to Thursday night at 8:30 on NBC. We'll follow Superstore in that 8 to 9 time period on Eastern and Pacific time. You have a question or comment for Michael again, 646-652-2906. That's the number to use. Next week is Diversity Week, where here in New York, a lot of activities will focus on expanding diversity in television. And one of those activities is Urban World, the annual film festival that HBO and other people sponsor. And this time, they are showcasing a brand new venture that is out to get more network and movies aimed at people of color and by people of color funding. The project is called Overstand. We have got the founder of that project, Sharif Bullock Bailey, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively right here on Tamavi Televised. I think you'll be very interested in what she is going to do and how she's going to do it later next week at Urban World. All right, Michael, let's get to The Good Place. I think probably if it was summed up in a phrase, it would be an afterlife about the afterlife. Elaborate for us.
Well, yeah, the premise of the show is Kristen Bell's character dies, and she arrives in the afterlife, and she's greeted by Ted Danson, which I think we can all agree would be what you expect, that Ted Danson would be there. And he sort of explains that there's a good place and a bad place, and she's made it into the good place, and it's incredibly hard to get there. It's a very rigid system. Only about one in every sort of 500,000 people or so makes it. Everybody else goes to the bad place. And it's really reserved for only the very, very, very best, nicest, kindest, and people who lived. And what she realizes very quickly is that there's been some kind of mistake or clerical error or some kind of screw-up, and that she does not in any way belong there. And so this show is about her realizing and coming to terms with the fact that she wasn't a very good person when she was on Earth. She wasn't like a murderer or an arsonist or anything. She just wasn't. She was a kind of a mediocre person who was a little bit selfish and a little bit callous and a little bit sort of unfeeling about other people. And so the show is about her realizing that and then trying to correct it and trying to sort of earn her place there before she gets caught by Ted.
What intrigued you and your crew, Michael, in taking on a comedy that deals with the afterlife and people trying to manage their life there?
Well, honestly, it was just a sort of parts of the show have been sort of milling around my brain for a long time. And one of them is just the sort of sense you get when you witness behavior in public that you just kind of know is bad. And that you might not even know what you mean by bad. But when someone just yells at a customer service agent who's, you know, genuinely trying to sort of just do his or her job, or when someone yells, stiffs a waiter, or when someone cuts you off in traffic, I just have this sort of this immediate feeling like that's just bad behavior. And I just started wondering what would happen if life were like a video game where we're all playing it all the time. We don't know we're playing it, but when you do things like that, it has an effect. It has a tangible effect. There's a point value. You cut someone off in traffic, you lose 5 points. You donate $25 anonymously to a charity that helps, you know, homeless people, that's plus 19 points, whatever it is. And so I just started thinking about the idea that the true answer to what happens after we die is like, well, how'd you do? Like, what was your score? And maybe if your score is high enough, you sort of get into this exclusive afterlife positive good place. So that was the beginning of it. And then I pitched the show to Kristen Bell. And I worked out sort of not only the pilot, but where the whole first season would go. And I pitched the show to Kristen Bell, and I sort of described her as a person who, you know, she's the kind of person who not only would cut someone off in traffic, but if she got honked at, she would then give that person the finger and just drive away totally unmoved by the fact that she had done something that was kind of annoying or bad. So that once that character, which seemed really rich and fun, started to take shape, and then I imagined that person getting put in the wrong place, being put in the good place, then that was the genesis of the show.
Mm-hmm. Compared to the other shows you've created or co-created, Parks and Recreation and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, was it an easier or harder experience to develop the show?
Well, in some senses, it was easier because, you know, when you create a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Parks and Recreation or, you know, I didn't create The Office, but I worked on it in the first 4.5 years, you're a little bit hemmed in, right? It's like the characters are purportedly real people who are undergoing real situations, and you're sort of limited to what happens in real life on Earth to some extent. And in this case, you can let your imagination run a little wild. It was really fun to invent an entirely new world with new rules and a new system, and, you know, you can get very creative, and that was very liberating. In some senses, though, I would say it's harder because with that sort of creative freedom, you have to explain to people what they're watching at all times, or else they're going to get really restless and distracted and bored and confused. So it's a little of both, I would say. There were good and bad things about it from a creative standpoint, but I think at the end of the day, the other writers and I and the actors managed to figure out a way to explain the world fairly quickly and simply in a way that hopefully will lead to people being able to just enjoy it. And at the end of the day, with any TV show, it's about the characters, it's about the way they relate to each other, it's about finding ways for the audience to sort of identify with them or come to care about them. So, you know, whether it's the wildest, most imaginative setting or the most sort of basic, you know, it's a family show or it's a workplace show or whatever, it's really about how you make the audience identify with the characters, and that was always our focus.
At any point, did you find any inspiration in some of the classic films like Here Comes Mr. Jordan or Heaven Can Wait original and the Warren Beatty remake or A Guy Named Joe with Spencer Tracy and the remake that Spielberg did Always in terms of how to showcase the afterlife? It seems that one of the things with all of those films that made them so popular one way or another was that they had a sense of whimsy to it. It was irreverent, but in a whimsical, understandable way for people.
I know it's sort of, no pun intended, sacrilegious to say this, but I've actually never seen any of those movies. I somehow missed them all. I've seen Defending Your Life, which I enjoyed. It's a different idea. Obviously, that's about sort of purgatory and being judged on your life, as opposed to this system, which is like the judging is over. The judging happened before the show started, and you're now just there or you're not. But yeah, obviously, I think any conception of the afterlife, you're dealing with death, right? That's the sort of background of the story, of any story, is that people died. And it's a little bit of a challenge to keep that from weighing the show down. And we found certain ways of doing that, I think, that are pretty effective. For example, you know, there's no kids in The Good Place, and that is because the concept of children who are there would be just too sad, I think, to contemplate. But also, at the very beginning of the pilot, Ted says to Kristen, so here's the situation. You died. Your life on Earth is over, and you're now in the next phase of your existence in the universe. And her response is to take a beat, and then she just goes, cool. And that was sort of us saying, like, whatever the situation is, it really is a feeling like that old thing is over and now this is a new thing, and this new thing you're not weighed down or sort of dragged down by regret or longing or nostalgia or anything like that. It's really a new journey, and it begins anew, and everybody is sort of like the slate is wiped clean a little bit. Now, obviously, for Eleanor, part of her problem is that she's constantly forced to sort of contemplate what her life on Earth was, because she realizes that she isn't supposed to be here, and you'd get flashbacks to her old life, and as the show goes on, you'll get flashbacks to other characters' old lives to sort of show who they were then as opposed to who they are now. And her journey is obviously trying to think about the ways that she behaved on Earth and then do a little bit of a better job in this new place where she's landed.
What kind of attitudes do you explore with Kirsten's character that needs some readjusting to get to the good place?
Well, that's a good question. That was a huge part of the early work that we did, that I did on my own and then we did with the writers, which was to say, okay, we're creating a character who's bad, sort of in quotes. What does that mean? There are a lot of kind of, I think, fairly uninteresting ways that TV shows and movies have portrayed women particularly as bad, and those usually involve drinking too much or doing drugs or having a lot of sex or something like that. These sort of old, very fuddy-duddy-ish conceptions of like what makes a good person or a bad person. And we wanted to sort of sidestep all of that. And where we landed is that the sort of, if she has a central flaw, and it's sort of pointed out to her in the second episode, it really boils down to her being selfish. Selfishness is a quality that I loathe in people. I loathe it in myself when I display it. And I think it just sort of, people who feel like they are at the sort of center of the universe, that everything is revolving around them, they have no sort of empathy or sort of ability to relate to other people or put themselves in other people's shoes. That's very often, I think, a quality that if a person displays that quality, it's very difficult for that person, in my mind, to be considered a good person. So that was one of the sort of umbrella categories of, I guess you would call it, bad behavior. It all stems from her having been a fairly selfish person and not really that interested in the lives of other people. And so that's a big part of her early work, is sort of coming to terms with the fact that she was selfish and figuring out ways to change that.
The Good Place, one of NBC's new situation comedies, premieres this Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time, and it will then move later this month to Thursday night, its regular time period, 8:30 p.m. And by the way, on the opening night, it will be an hour-long premiere, and later on it will be half-hour episodes from there. We have the executive producer of the program, Michael Schur, with us. He's also up for 2016 Emmy Award this Sunday night for executive producing the acclaimed and Peabody-winning Netflix series, Master of None. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Happy to have him aboard. Happy to have you aboard on this Friday afternoon. Live from New York, Simon Applebaum here with you. You have a question or comment for Michael? Go ahead and ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 0419, gets 92, gets 1014, Rip of our friends in Philadelphia already in the room. 1 week from today on the program, Women 2.0, the long-running organization out to connect women and their technology dreams into reality, is doing some adjusting of its own. And we'll find out whether that adjusting might include encouraging more women to create more television projects, both technology and content. The co-founder of Women 2.0, Kate Burdock, will join us. That's 1 week from today right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And 2 weeks from today among our guests, the wonderful actress and producer director Ileana Douglas will join us, and she'll talk about, among other things, the second annual Turner Classic Movies presentation dealing with women in film. That will take place next month, and we'll find out whether she will be doing some television stuff. She's dabbled it before along with web work. Ileana Douglas, 2 weeks from today, she'll be our lead guest right here on Tomorrow We Televise, 6:10 Eastern, noon Pacific. You've never heard Ileana. She is a delight. And I believe we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televise. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, you're on the line with Michael Schur. Go ahead.
Hi, Michael. I know that you attended Harvard and you were a member of the Harvard Lampoon before you moved to Saturday Night Live. Well, I'm just wondering about like your background and what kind of led you into writing comedy, especially for like NBC and like rather than cable so much, where so many comedians nowadays are headed towards cable, where I'm just trying to find out that secret spice to how you're more with networks as opposed to cable and whatnot.
Well, some of that is just sort of random chance. My first job was Saturday Night Live. I worked there for 6.5 years, and then I wanted to move to Los Angeles. My then girlfriend, now wife, had moved, and we were sort of trying to date long distance, and that's never a great idea. So I just applied for jobs at sitcoms in Los Angeles, and I was lucky enough to get hired at The Office, and part of the, like, you know, part of the just luck of the draw was getting that job with Greg Daniels, who sort of taught me and other people on that staff how to write for half-hour shows. And that led directly to Greg and me creating Parks and Recreation together. And then I sort of just stayed in the network world. I mean, I worked on The Comeback, which is on HBO, and I now work on Master of None, which is on Netflix. But I've just sort of been in the network world, and I think there are certain benefits to it. There's obviously benefits to places like HBO or Netflix or Hulu, where you can make your episodes a little bit longer, and you can curse sometimes if you want to, and there's no commercials. And I think that's a lot of the reasons that people are gravitating that direction. But especially in comedy, I think that the sort of rigid structure of network comedy is good for comedy. It causes you to really make your stories very lean and mean. It forces you into a good sort of three-act structure in the way that you write your scripts, which is good. Comedy, I think, works very well when there are obstacles. You can get kind of lazy in comedy if you have all the time in the world and no hurdles to jump over. So it's just sort of the way it's worked out for me, and I certainly like a lot the creative freedom and the sort of storytelling freedom that places without commercial breaks offer you, but I think that there's real value in writing for the network formula still, so I'm perfectly happy to be here.
Cool. And I think part of the answer is you're just really, really smart.
Thanks, Rick.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for your answer, and have a great weekend, and thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick. A pleasure. Take care. Have a great weekend on your own down in Philly. And congrats to the Eagles, by the way, on winning their first football game last week.
Absolutely. A heck of a game and a heck of a new quarterback.
Yep, you got it. Remember, our great friend from Philadelphia right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Michael, one thread in all the shows you've done one way or another has been diversity. Diverse cast, diverse people behind the scenes. How is diversity showing up with The Good Place? And as you talk to your writers and directors in the various rooms about how you want to showcase diversity in terms of a theme or an ongoing theme in the series.
Well, in the sort of big picture, it's one of the reasons I wanted to make it very clear that this was not any one religion's conception of the afterlife. I felt like it was very important to show that the people who make it there are people from anywhere, who lived anywhere, who believed anything on earth, it didn't matter. So very early in the show, you'll see people of almost every ethnicity we could possibly imagine. You'll see Hispanic people, you see Indian, Pakistani people. One of the main characters was born in Pakistan. There are Filipino people, there are African people, there are Australians and people from Finland, everything you can think of. And that was I just felt like that was a very important thing to establish early on, that this is not anyone, this is not the Western Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, this is everyone from all over the world. That was a big deal to me. And then beyond that, you know, when you actually get down to the casting, I work with a woman named Allison Jones, who is the greatest casting director, for my money, in the world. And I very often have told her, we did this with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, we did it to some extent with Parks and Rec, although with Parks and Rec we had a lot of the actors in mind before we started, but we did it with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and we did it with this place. It was, look, I imagined this, one of the characters from the show, I imagined as Jameela Jamil is the actress who plays her. I imagined her as of Indian descent, but with a British accent. But what I told her was, look, if you find an amazing, South Korean woman with a British accent, that's fine too. If you find a woman who is African American, a woman from, you know, Peru, it doesn't really matter to me. This is the design in my head, but it's really about getting the best actor for each role. And when you do that, it just opens your mind. I mean, we had one character. There's a character named Janet who is a sort of walking Siri, I guess you would say. She's a sort of like an informational delivery system. She knows everything that ever happened in the entire universe. You can ask her any question you want. And I said, I imagine this woman this character is like a 35-year-old woman, but Allison Jones brought in a 13-year-old boy. She brought in men of every age. She brought in people of every ethnicity. And it just makes it so much easier because, you know, it's so much better to find the actor regardless of what the actor looks like and then build the part around that actor than try to invent something exactly one tiny little corner of the world and then find the perfect person from that tiny corner of the world. So when you do that, when you approach the casting of your show with that in mind, it does two things. It makes it much easier to cast your show because you're not limiting yourself. And then also it leads to a wonderfully diverse cast of people who don't all look alike. And I find that to be just much more interesting and enjoyable creatively than if it's, you know, 8 white people.
So This Place kicks off Monday night with an hour-long premiere. That's 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on NBC. And then later this month, we'll move to its regular time period, Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. after the new season of Superstore. That's all on NBC. Check your local listings for the NBC station in your area. For more details on the program online, you can go to NBC.com. And one of the other things that Michael puts together, Master of None, the Peabody Award-winning film from Netflix, has Emmy nominations coming its way, maybe some Emmy wins, this Sunday night. The ceremony is live from Los Angeles, and it starts at 7 p.m. on ABC. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, we should also point out, is coming back for its new season later this month on Fox. Michael, congratulations on the Emmy nominations, getting Good Place off the ground, the renewal for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, everything you're doing. It's been a pleasure to have you on. All the very best Sunday night and Monday night. It's going to be a really amazing weekend plus for you, and we're delighted you could spend some of it with us right before the weekend here on the program.
Thank you so much. This was really fun. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. For sure, Michael. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Michael Schiller, executive producer and head writer of The Good Place on NBC, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow's show live is coming shortly, but right now we have a message from the fine people at Audible.com. One of the early 2017 treats for television is going to be American Gods on Stars, and it's the first television series based on the work of the brilliant author and illustrator Neil Gaiman. Well, Neil has an audiobook that just came out this week. It's called Odd and the Frost and the Frost Giants. That's Odd and the Frost Giants, and he narrates it. And guess what? You can get it if you subscribe to Audible.com, and we'll tell you how shortly. You know, Audible.com is one amazing sound experience. That's why it's the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, with over 180,000 titles to choose from. And the best part is, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Now remember, You sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You can get Odd and the Frost Giants by Neil Gaiman or any free audiobook of your choice, and you get a 1 month trial of the service. And given Audible is an Amazon.com company, you know the customer service is off the map. So, if you like audio and want to go whole hog into a great audio experience that can inspire and entertain you, give audio.com a trial. audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised for the best sound experience anywhere in the universe. When we come back, the answer to this week's Classic Trivia question, and we're going live to Dover, Vermont, the site of the next big television festival coming up next month. It's ITFest, and we've got the executive director, Philip Gilpin Jr., on the line. He joins us after we call us after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com/... Well, our homepage is /televised. Just a little simple thing to say afterward, but it is blogtalkradio.com with more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for What's the Buzz NYC with comedian and author Nancy Lombardo. Join Nancy and a wonderful guest for a lot of laughs and some great conversation, too. What's the Buzz NYC, Fridays, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR will be 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow's Televised for this Friday afternoon getaway day from any side of Applebaum. We'll be live from NYC. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you with us. Another great guest coming your way in this half hour ahead. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906, and be in the conversation. Remember, that line is good anyway you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio. And we've got the chat room open. Simon Apple 04 by name, that's 1133 and 1982 are in the room. So join them and make your voice heard. We have been covering increasingly the growing number of television festivals that are happening around the country, like the New York Television Festival happening late next month, like Series Fest in Denver, whose co-founder Randy Klein will be here in New York tomorrow as part of the IFP Film Festival, which is getting more and more television, starting with latest edition, which opens up tomorrow here in BKLYN. Well, there's another television festival that's happening earlier in October, specifically October 5th through the 9th. It's called ITVS Fest. And joining us live to talk all about it and how big it is getting is the executive director of that festival, live from Dover, Vermont, Philip Gilpin Jr. Hello, Philip.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. And how are you getting ready for your festival?
Oh, good. We're getting ready. We're about 19 days out. The foliage is turning up here, and we got everything lined up for about 1,000 people that are going to be showing up for the week up here for ITV Fest this year.
And your festival has been running as long as the New York Television Festival here. Where did it get started and how?
Yeah, ITV Fest was started in Los Angeles in 2006, just around the same time that YouTube first launched publicly. It was West Coast based, and it was started by a couple of TV producers out there, AJ and Jenny Tesler, and at the time there were no television festivals. So if you had a television pilot in 2006 and you didn't have an agent or you didn't know somebody in the industry, you didn't have a festival to take your pilot to and get it seen by an audience, get it judged by other professionals, and potentially find a way to reach the networks and the agencies that could help you break through the industry. So they started ITV Fest with that purpose. I was working at HBO at the time, so I got invited to go. Loved the festival, met AJ and Denny, and then in 2012, I took the festival over, and we moved it out of Los Angeles to the mountains of Dover, Vermont.
Want to welcome Mike Rotman into our chat room. Yes, we know you are here. Also want to welcome guest 1157 and 1133 into our room. So if you have a question or comment, get into that room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, which is blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, use the phone, 646-652-2906. So why the move to Dover, where you are now? And are you surprised that we haven't seen another television festival pick up where yours left off in L.A.?
Yeah, so the move to Dover was about giving people access to Hollywood. I know that sounds really backwards, but what happens is when the festival was in Los Angeles, it started to get a little, it was a little difficult to get to meet everybody that was there. So what happens is when you're here in Vermont, the town that we're in has about 900 full-time residents, so we literally take over the town for a week. So instead of running into people on the corner of Sunset Boulevard or out on the corner of, you know, 5th and Broadway, you're running into people in a fire pit out behind the restaurant or at the pool table by the bar or in the old-time tavern at the inn. So you get this opportunity to actually develop human relationships with people, and sometimes these people are actors and writers and directors who this is their first project. Other times it's showrunners and executives at major shows and networks. So the connections that you can make by being here in the Vermont setting is just an opportunity that the big cities don't give you as a creative artist.
So a lot of people know Dover, Delaware, and not Dover, Vermont. What kind of town is Dover, Vermont? Is it pastoral? Is it a very art town-like place, hometown USA? What's the flavor of the area?
Yeah, it's actually at the base of a ski mountain. So in the winter, it's the Mount Snow ski resort town. And there's another mountain here as well called Haystack, and they have a private ski club called the Hermitage Club. So in the winter, it's filled with skiers and snowboarders. But in the summer and fall, it's a very beautiful New England kind of picturesque town. And what we do is we set the festival against the fall foliage season. So you're here, and it's just like the world has been painted colors for us. It's always a beautiful experience. And it just relaxes everybody. You know, as soon as people get out of their cars, after they get off their plane or off the train to get here, because it is a little bit of an adventure to get here, you're instantly relaxed. And after the first couple of days, you get to be what we call is Vermont time, meaning everything slows down a little bit, and people start talking about the projects that they're working on, or, you know, who they know and how they can help each other. And that camaraderie, that spirit, is really something that's unique to having the festival in a location like this.
Now, with this year's festival, you had about 450, 460 entries. You picked over 50, but that's not all. As I sort of inferred in the opening tease back at the top of the hour, there are many, many more pilot people who are not going to have a showcase, but they are going to have a meeting. And I believe that's like, what, 150, 160 pilot makers?
Yeah, so we got about 500 submissions total this year from over 23 countries around the world. There are a lot of independent creators that are making a lot of episodic television out there. Some of them are shorts, 14, 15 minutes long. Some of them are full-on half hours and hours. And I think of the industry, you know, a lot of the people in the networks and the studios and the agencies, they're just not aware of it yet. So that's our job, is to make them aware that, hey, there are all these amazing shows. There are, in fact, so many shows that while we pick 50, 60, or 70 to screen officially at the festival, we also have a section called Network Notes. And what Network Notes is, are the shows that were right on the cusp of getting selected. And instead of being like another festival where we simply have you're either screening or you have no presence here, we give that group of people that were right on the edge of being selected the ability to come and meet with some of the judges and the producers, have the notes from their selection discussed so that they can learn more about the process and what the people who watch the shows thought. Because our goal isn't to eliminate people from coming into the independent television world. It's to open up the doors to the independent television world and get as many artists as possible, as many opportunities as possible. And last year when we launched the Network Notes project, there was some great mentorships and partnerships that came out of them.
Well, speaking of Bill Gilman Jr., he is the executive director of ITV Fest, 11th annual edition happening October 5th to the 9th in Dover, Vermont. That's where we find him this half hour, live here on Tomorrow Be Told Live. Simon Applebaum here with you from New York City. Happy you're with us this Friday afternoon on Blog Talk Radio, September 2016. You have a question or a comment for Philip? Bring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple041, you have 1168, and guest 982, Mike Robin mentioned earlier. Rick Rebar from Philadelphia, you heard in the last half hour, still on the line. So get in the room, get on the phone, make something happen. As I mentioned earlier, the birthday week starts on Monday here in New York City. A lot of events going on from the likes of Women in Cable, NAMIC, the Cable Diversity Association, and also a wonderful conference called Urban World that is becoming more television as film. And one of the people who will be making an appearance at Urban World will join us Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised. Her name is Sharon Bullock Bailey, and she founded a venture called Overstand to help get investment for people of color and women of color to develop film and TV projects. And they have a very interesting idea that they will showcase at Urban World called The Stand. It will make its debut 1 week from today. But we'll have Cherise with us that this coming Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Give a listen. I think you will like what she is going to talk about. And speaking about diversity, Philip, What effort is there to try to make sure that you have as many entries from women, from people of color, and from women of color?
Yeah, so ITV Fest, the way that we pick our shows is entirely merit-based. So we don't accept submissions from agencies. We don't accept submissions just because they have a celebrity in them. And we level the playing field in that regard. So the way that we judge our shows is we watch them first, and it's entirely based upon the quality of the show, not whether it was made by a man or a woman or a person from a certain country. It has to do with whether or not this is a story that is told very well, has a direct connection to an audience, and if it's something that, you know, should be given the opportunity to be seen by, you know, people within the industry that have, you know, a larger distribution opportunity. So we focus solely on the artistic merit of the show and absolutely nothing else.
In a blog post on your festival's website, Philip, you mentioned that a fair chunk of your entries, both the ones you picked but also the ones you didn't pick, could go on any television outlet right now, whether a broadcast network, a cable network, a multicast channel, a Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle, full screen, et cetera, and then another bunch of network of entries could also get on, even though the cost of making them was very, very low. You mentioned that some were made for what, $15,000,
$20,000? Oh, we've had shows made for way less than that. You know, the example that you mentioned about the amount of networks that are out there, it's only going to grow. One of our main sponsors, actually our title sponsor this year, is a company called Acumen TV, and they are both a technology company and a television company. They're launching a device that has a television projector in it, so you have a television in your pocket wherever you go. They needed content for their device and for the Acumen TV network that they are putting on. So they're going around, they've been signing deals with Sony and all the other big content creators, but they also wanted to see what the content creators of tomorrow were making today. So they signed a deal with us to sponsor the festival so they could get access to the content creators that we have coming this year. So there's all these brand new television stations that you mentioned, and, you know, like last year, the winner, good old J-Bev, Jay, if you're out there listening, with Picking a Caucasian, he won Best Reality. He shot his show on $400. The winner of Best Overall of the Festival, Noah Clore, who shot an amazing hour-long drama pilot out of his studio in Michigan, I believe he's 24, you know, 24-year-old filmmaker, learned After Effects in about 6 months and made a show that is capable of being put on Sci-Fi Tonight, and people would think that it was a multi-million-dollar network show. There are people out there that, because the price of technology is getting so much lower, that their talent is able to shine through, because as the barriers, whether it's technological or financial or business-wise, are being taken down, the talent gets to rise to the top. And so, yeah, we have literally 74 shows this year that are on our site. You could sit there the next time that you're watching television and you're bored and you're flipping through the channels and you say to yourself, I can't find anything good, and you've already gone through all of your Netflix queues, go onto the ITVFest.com website, take a look at the content page. There are hours and hours and hours of shows on there that you haven't seen before and that you'll be happy if you do the watch.
This television network that Acumen is doing with their device, would the content be exclusive on that network to that device, or would they make the network available to smart TV sets or smart devices like a Roku, Apple TV, Chromecast, and such?
I believe right now it's exclusive only to their device. That's just their channel. So the content that's going on to their channel, it's up to the content creator to decide if they want to have an exclusive deal with Acumen. But I believe right now that Acumen channel itself, you can only get on its device. I don't know if they have plans to make like an Acumen TV app that can go on to a box at a different time. So.
Mm-hmm. What kind of network or service representation will be there? HBO is a sponsor. Are they the only network that will be there? If not, who else?
Yeah, so that's the incredible part, is we have so many high-level panelists and speakers that are coming this year. As you mentioned, HBO is our main network sponsor. They're a great partner. Their Vice President of Talent Development, Kelly Edwards, is going to be here the whole time. She's a great person for content creators to meet. And then there are representatives coming from big networks like NBC. We have relationships with people at the Hallmark Channel. The executive producer of Watch What Happens Live on Bravo, Cassie Spinoza, is going to be here. On and on down the list, the casting director of House of Cards in turn, Eric Arvold, is coming. We have the gentleman who was the showrunner and writer on the TV show The Jeffersons. And then we've got some celebrity names. Bobby Farrelly is going to be here. We all know, you know, the amazing work that Bobby Farrelly has done over the years. But not only is he coming, he's bringing his producer, Chris Meyer, the man behind the scenes on all the projects, who's actually EPing on Super Troopers 2. And then we've got Brett Butler, star from Grace Under Fire. She's, you know, going to be having a new TV show coming out. She's going to be here to talk about that. Tamara Tooney, who stars as the medical examiner on Law & Order, she's coming to give a keynote about her experiences as an actress within the industry. So that's the thing that makes ITZ Fest so interesting, is that agents come in from Three Arts Entertainment, just on and on and on down the list, and the access that you get to the people is like nowhere else. We don't have green rooms. We don't get done with a panel and usher the VIPs off stage into a secret area where people can access them. When they get done with their panel, they're going to play pool or sit at the same bar that everybody else is. And so those relationships, you have the opportunity to get made in a setting that you just can't find in the city.
Well, welcome Will Vandermeer into our chat room. Simon Apple 0419, thanks for being aboard. We know you are here, as well as other folks who've just joined the room in the last couple of minutes. So if you have a question or a comment, put it in the room. We'll get to it. And you can also give us a call, 646-652-2906. The number is anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And we get a chance, Philip and I will maybe do some Emmy predicting before the half hour is up near the top of the hour. Philip, you're part of this growing number of television festivals around the country, and in recent months, some things are starting to happen with some of these festivals. I want to go over them like one by one. First of all, you have Series Fest in Denver now working with a crowdfunding site, See & Spark, on what's called the New Voice Crowdfunding Rally, which would try to help get TV series off the ground in a sort of a crowdfunding atmosphere. Is that something you're focusing on with your festival to try to encourage crowdfunding, whether Indiegogo, Seed and Spark, Kickstarter, or now the equity crowdfunding that's been made available since February?
Yeah, we encourage content creators to take, you know, any method that they think is right for where they're at in their career and where their show is at. In terms of giving content creators distribution to the world, we're working on something for that that's going to be coming next year.
We'd love to have you back on and talk about it. It sounds very exciting.
Yeah, it is, because I think it's time that television has not just a television channel for independent film, but for independent television as well.
Second thing, we're starting to see entries at one television festival show up at others. Some of the ones that have been here at the New York Television Festival in the last year or two are now showing up at Series Fest. A number of them also may be showing up at your thing. And also, Series Fest helped get another TV festival, Norfolk, in Long Island, off the ground a few weekends ago. Is that something also you see in the cards, where entries that premiere at your festival first will be able somehow or another, maybe through direct intervention on your part or your organization's part, to go to other festivals?
Yeah, I mean, there are thousands of film festivals out there for people who are making films. So with television taking over the culture the way that it is, it's only natural that there's going to be an increase in the number of television festivals popping up. As you mentioned, we're the oldest one. We've been around for 11 years. When IndieWire was here last year, they came to visit Vermont, and the article that they wrote called us the future Sundance of independent television, not just referencing the mountain setting, but also it kind of has that feeling here of the way that people describe what Sundance was like before it became a little bit too big and a little bit too corporate. You know, like I said from the start, we're very artist-focused. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. Our mission here is not to make money. Our mission here is to solve the problem that I think is the artistic cause of our time, which is to create viable living wages for independent content creators so that they can wake up every day and go make the next few episodes of the show instead of having to wondering how to pay the bill. So that's why we're bringing together not just, you know, shows to put on screen, but people who can create an independent television finance model in an actual industry out of this. So I think you're going to see various new festivals pop up. But, you know, a decade in, ITV Fest is leading the way on how to actually create an independent television business model.
Third thing, we're now starting to see some of the film festivals, whether they're general, like Sundance, New York, Chicago, Boston, L.A., Telluride, etc., as well as specialized ones like IFP Film Week, which is launching tomorrow here in Brooklyn, get into television, some major, some small. For example, and in one way, IFP Film Week tomorrow will have Rose McGowan, the former co-star of Charmed, on UPN and the WB, who has just launched a TV production company, and she is going to put together a project called Presenting Women tomorrow afternoon, which is going to try to invite women and women of color to create television shows that she might be able to get off the ground somewhere. We're also seeing, in the wake of the Oscar situation, a number of ventures like We for She, We Did It Together, Lifetime is doing something, Women in Film is doing their project with The Blacklist. There's the Alice Institute, which started a few weeks ago, and they've got their website also trying to get women filmmakers and women TV makers to get more projects. Any chance that your film that your festival might go somewhere in that vein?
In terms of having new opportunities for content creators show up at other festivals, that's not a surprise. We've been in this space for over a decade now, so we're happy to have more opportunities for everybody to start finding their way through. I mean, the biggest problem in television right now is that there's a huge bottleneck in terms of worldwide distribution. There are very few ways to get your show seen on a network or on some type of a platform that is distributed worldwide that has a major brand behind it. And those major brands, their development slates sometimes are already 300, 400, 500 shows deep. And they like to only work with named people, or they only like to work with people who come to them through an agency. They're trying to battle the issue of being a new type of company in a digital age, but they're still using an old business model. There's a squeeze happening where you have so many talented independent content creators making so many shows. The current existing network model can't handle it all. So that's why you see some of these people that have shows, they're starting to put them up on YouTube or they're starting to put them up on Vimeo, and they're saying, you know what? Screw it. I need to go find an audience, so I'm going to go build an audience on my own. And in that vein, we've had 212 shows that have streamed in the last 3 years, not even including this year. About 10% of those decided to go the YouTube route. They've collected over a collective audience of 50 million views. So these are eyeballs that are watching independent content and independent episodic shows that aren't watching the major networks, that aren't watching Netflix or NBC at that time. So I think the industry is having to adjust, and what you're seeing by having some of the bigger festivals that are out there try to incorporate a television competition is that they're starting to realize, hey, there's something brewing over here with all these people making episodics now. We need to start finding a way to capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Tribeca Film Festival, which has been dabbling in TV on and off, is going to have a very, very big television aspect to it next spring. I want to get in a chat room question from Will Vandermeer, who just posted a few minutes ago before we wrap. Related to new financial models developing, will there be any resources at your event for helping content creators get financing for projects, whether, as I said, crowdfunding with venture capital, angel investor, whatever which way?
Yes. What happens this year is we have a series of events that are called executive roundtables, which gives you a intimate opportunity to be in a room with whichever executive that you want to go meet and talk with them. You can't necessarily pitch your show, but you can get to make those relationships. We have financiers coming. We have a strong team of international financiers who are responsible for hundreds of millions of dollars of international film production and distribution who are going to be here. And they're all starting to look at the independent television world and saying, hey, this show's really interesting, or this show I really like. So the way that we do it is we don't necessarily set up a time and a place where you go to a building at 4 o'clock and there's a meeting and there's a panel about finance. What we do is we invite everybody to come up for 5 days and get to meet the financiers and get to meet the producers and get to meet the people who are show running the shows on current networks. I mean, Randy Zisk, who's show running Bones is coming out that weekend. You've got Joel Surnow, the creator of 24. He's going to be here for the week. Michael Rosenberg, who is the showrunner on Hung and the EP on Hell on Wheels, he's going to be here for the week. So people like that who have access to the Capitol, we think that by giving you the opportunity to do the work of building personal relationships with these people will result in you being able to find financing for your project if they think that it's good enough and can find a home.
I'm interested to hear what Joel Stern has to say. I've been a fan of his work for years, dating back to The Equalizer and Nowhere Man, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, I'm happy Nowhere Man is now on YouTube. If you've never seen that show from UPN, one of the best things they ever did. And I'm thrilled with most of the episodes are now available there. Before we wrap up, Philip, any predictions for Sunday night?
Oh, I mean, what have you been watching lately?
Well, since you gave me a good segue, I'll tell you what I think could win. I think in Best Comedy, I think Veep's going to do it for the second year in a row. It's getting a lot of nominations in writing and directing. I think also very popular, Julia Dreyfus is going to win Best Actress, but I'm picking somebody else in that category. Amy Schumer, for Inside Amy Schumer. I've been watching Mr. Robot. I think the second season is amazing. I saw the episode Wednesday night, another brilliant one written direct by Sam Esmail. I think the show will win Best Drama. I think Robbie Malek is going to win Best Actor, and Sam Esmail will win for writing a drama series. I just think it's an incredibly subversive show, one of the best things on television right now. I think that's going to win Best Drama. And then I think movies can be all the way on HBO. Bryan Cranston, I think, will also get a win for his performance as LBJ. And for miniseries, a big sweep in those categories for American Crime Story, People vs. O.J. Simpson. This may be, by the way, the first Emmy Award competition that FX, not HBO in recent years, will get the most Emmy Awards. They
that
are
would be
closing.
An interesting question.
Yeah, HBO has 16. FX has 12 going into Sunday night. So they're in striking distance, both for American Crime Story and for Fargo. And I see definitely Courtney Vance and Sarah Paulson are going to win the lead actor and actress race for a movie miniseries for their performances. Although Bryan Cranston could still do it for All the Way.
Yeah. Well, can you tell I'm a festival director and I don't make picks?
For sure. ITV Fest 2016, October 5th and 9th in Dover, Vermont. To find out more about the festival and the nominated shows that are in it, go to this website, www.itvfest.com. That's www.itvfest.com. And so what we would love to do, as we've done with the other festivals we covered, like New York TV and Series Fest and so on, is that once you announce the winners in the various categories, we would like to have some of the winners on our program sometime before the end of October. So let's see if you have an open invite for that.
That would be great. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Philip, thanks for making the time. All the very best with your festival. It's going to be dynamite. And again, best of luck to all the nominees and the winners. And we would love to have you back on and talk about the global initiative you're going to do. I think it's going to be very, very exciting and super groundbreaking.
Thank you very much. We'll be sure to come back and talk to you about it when it launches.
Will do. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Philip Gilpin Jr. from ITV Fest, joining us live from the festival's headquarters in Dover, Vermont. Because of time, we're not going to do the answer to the classroom question. We're going to hold it over for next week. By the way, the question, you have an opportunity to check it out, is this. What 1960s ABC comedy star Burl Ives? What 1960s ABC comedy star Burl Ives? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or tweet the hashtag TWBT. And if you are first correct answer, starting Monday of next week, we will award you Twin Peaks FAQ, the book by Applause Books. We are back on Monday at our regular time. Remember, you can check us out on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We came in late on the program. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We would love to hear from you. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, and he tells Blog Talk Radio's general manager and the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. We're back Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Unit Air, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you do, please be safe and be great out there. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.